Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I am your host, Mark Levin, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. I'm sitting in a desolate building, the only light on in this building. Everyone else is home, away for vacation, and I am here to talk about the events of 2017. This will be my very last show of the year. And actually, my last show for about 3 months. Those of you who know me know I have another job. In addition to being talk radio host, I am a Virginia State Representative, a delegate in the Virginia House of Delegates. And come early January, I'll be going down to Richmond, Virginia, the state capital, to pass some good laws, hopefully, to stop some bad laws, to write some laws. I will be back on the air Monday, April 2nd, so circle your calendars now. In the meantime, Leslie Marshall will be taking over for the next 3 months. So this is my last chance to talk to you for 3 months. And God knows what's going to happen in the next 3 months. But I want to talk to you about 2017. It's, I think, appropriate in a year-end show to talk about what went well and what didn't go well in this year of all years. And for better and for worse, this was a year all about Donald Trump. Actually, I think I should say for worse and for even worse, it was a year about Donald Trump. From our trepidations, our fear at the beginning of the year of what would happen once he became president on January 20th, to our incredible astonishment at how awful a president he was. The tweets alone showed a man who is not only incapable of understanding public policy. He has no interest in it. He just makes up stuff as he goes along, and most of it is false. And it really showed a little bit about who our country is. I think the Trump administration in 2017 reminds me of those disaster movies. You know the ones. Things start out where things are okay, but you fear something really bad is going to happen, and then really bad things do happen, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And then, just when you think it'll be okay, it gets even worse. But then, as the movies end, somehow the heroes regroup and find a way out of the darkness, find a way to stop whatever fire or intense hurricane or horrible disaster, maybe it's Godzilla, is wrecking the village, and they come together and they count their dead and they hug each other and they realize after beating the monster, they will live to see a better tomorrow. I don't know that we're at the end of our disaster film yet, but I do know that we got some hope at the end of 2017. And that hope mostly came from my home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, where Democrats stunned, frankly, everyone, including Democrats, certainly in Virginia and definitely across the nation, in our power to regroup and our power to bring people together and win not just the governor, lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the statewide races, but a dramatic number of seats in the Virginia House of Delegates, the most that had been won in more than a century, and seats that would ultimately lead us right to the brink of having a majority, with still recounts to be decided. If you want to know details on those recounts, check out my show yesterday. So that's our hope. That's our fight against the disaster movie. And of course, it wasn't just Virginia. Doug Jones in Alabama, the reddest of the red states, gave us all some hope that people could bond together and fight Donald Trump. In the blue states, we had great races in New Jersey. In Washington state, we had a takeover of the state senate there, making Washington a solid blue state. And I have to say, the stories of 2017, one of the biggest stories is activism that culminated, yes, in the Virginia and Alabama elections, but began the day after inauguration. I was at the Women's March. Were you? I know that in Washington, D.C., there were millions of us there. I know that our numbers way dwarfed the tiny number of people who attended the Trump inauguration the day before. And I also know that when you add up rallies in not just New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, but in Nashville, in Toledo, in Pittsburgh, in tiny towns across the nation, in countries all over the globe, in Paris, in London, in Africa, in Asia, in South America, in Mexico, in Antarctica, the whole world was telling Donald Trump, we don't accept your vision of hatred and fear. And that activism is definitely what brought us to the great elections at the end of 2017. And frankly, I think it's going to propel us on to 2018. I think the lessons of 2017 were we were complacent in 2016. We didn't think this terrible thing could happen. And now we know it can and it does. And we're ready to fight it. So we're like the heroes in a disaster movie. But speaking of disasters, climate change really started to get the best of us in 2017. With massive hurricanes. There was these hurricanes that are once in 500-year hurricanes, according to the models based on the past climate. Only we had three once in 500-year hurricanes all occur one right after the other. One devastated Florida, one devastated Texas, and one continues to devastate Puerto Rico, where half the people still live without power months after the hurricane. And while most of the nation moves on, these American citizens are suffering intolerably. This is worse than Trump's Katrina. In fact, probably more people died in Hurricane Maria than in Hurricane Katrina. It's not quite clear. We don't even know all the numbers yet. But the devastation continues long after. And we don't even have time to talk about it because we're focused on the corruption within the Trump administration and all the parade of people who were fired because they were all incompetent or corrupt or both. Everyone from Michael Flynn to Sean Spicer to the Mooch, remember? Anthony Scaramucci, yeah, kind of miss him actually, colorful character, to who else? There's a long parade. I can't remember them all. We had Sally Yates at the beginning, Obama administration, who tried to warn the Trump administration, and just a parade of incompetence. But again, it was the year of movements, and not just electoral movements. It was the year where Black Lives Matter finally got the best and perhaps most unlikely spokesperson in Colin Kaepernick, who bravely took a knee during the Star Spangled Banner, and frankly brought a whole nation to its knees, particularly when the president condemned it. A whole nation finally focused on police violence against African Americans. A whole nation recognizing that whether we stand or kneel for the Star Spangled Banner, that the right of free speech, the right to kneel, that is more important an American right than any song of 200 years ago about rockets' red glare. It was another movement, maybe as big or bigger movement. We still don't know where it's going to end. It was the Me Too movement. That's also how 2017 will be remembered. I don't know what it was. I don't know why Donald Trump's 19 women didn't make the movement happen. Maybe it was his election. Maybe it was Harvey Weinstein or Matt Lauer or, I don't know, Bill Cosby, Bill O'Reilly. The list goes on and on. But something finally got us to focus on sexual harassment this year. And largely it's because the victims of sexual harassment, the survivors, spoke up. Knowing they put their jobs on the line, knowing the risks, they still spoke up. They are the heroes of 2017. And they brought this conversation into our living rooms. They had us talk about Roy Moore and how he would molest children. They had us talk about Al Franken and whether his bad joke and unwanted touching, whether that was enough to get him to resign. Democrats thought it was. He did resign. But George Bush, President George Bush, did the exact same thing, even worse. He made a joke as he grabbed women's behinds about David Copperfield. It's amazing how many men Haven't found a woman yet, though I suspect we'll find one eventually, have been involved in this kind of harassment, and the Me Too movement brought it to the fore. In terms of climate change, it wasn't just about hurricanes. It was about wildfire, huge wildfires in California. The heat keeps rising. And as the heat keeps rising and the wildfires and the hurricanes keep increasing, we have a Congress that is out to lunch, a Congress that, and a president who made us the only nation in the entire world not to fight climate change. Really pretty amazing, pulling out of the Paris Accords, which were actually fairly weak to begin with, but are weaker without us in them. And Congress instead first tried to take away everyone's health care, tried to end the Affordable Care Act. We now live in Trump care because the sabotaging of the Affordable Care Act has gone on so much that, premiums are going through the roof. And then the collapse in what will turn out, I think, to be one of the worst bills in American history, certainly the worst in this millennium since 2000, a bill to take money from middle-class people and give it to the rich, a bill to bring us all into massive, even more massive debt, a bill that showed Republicans to be the hypocrites that they said they weren't, a bill that shows that Republicans never cared about the debt. The Tea Party never cared about the debt. The Republicans don't give a damn about the middle class. They're all about shoveling money to the 0.1% of people that fund their campaigns. There were gifts for corporate jet owners. There were gifts for golf course owners. There were gifts for all kinds of Republican donors. The middle class, or shall we say 83% of Americans, will have their taxes increased by the time this is all over. But Republicans show that if they can steal from the poor and give to the rich, that's what they're all about. It was a year where a Supreme Court justice, I don't know what I should say, illegally or just immorally and unethically, found his way on the bench. In every single other presidency in all of American history for more than 200 years, when a Supreme Court justice dies in office, that president gets to appoint a new justice. Never in American history, never in 228 years since the Constitution became our Constitution, did Congress even go more than 100 or 200 days in deciding, in having hearings, holding hearings on a pick. But they took the very moderate Merrick Garland and they said, nope, we're going to use our power, even though we lost the election. Even though the American people preferred someone else, even though Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by more than 3 million votes, we're going to use our raw power by this anachronistic electoral college in order to ignore the president's choice and throw in our choice for Supreme Court. A man so mean, so cruel, that he would have a truck driver die of frostbite rather than disobey the orders of the truck driver's master. A guy who's basically promoting a new form of 21st century slavery, Neil Gorsuch. And that's the thing that Republicans are most proud of. Lots of things happened in 2017. These are the ones that are just fresh off of my mind. What are your thoughts about this year? The good, the bad, and the ugly. It's our day to discuss it. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back. Right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking about 2017. Still a lot to talk about. I haven't even addressed yet. I want to talk about Charlottesville and the rise of real Nazis marching in our streets, and a president who said that both sides, both those with the Nazis and those against the Nazis, were included good people. It was a year of mass murder, whether it's in Las Vegas or Texas. I want to talk about that and guns. It was a year where North Korea, very scary year, developed not just nuclear weapons, but the continental ballistic missiles that could bring them to our shores. It was a year when Russia's Vladimir Putin had as his prime target, his prime agent, his main man on the scene, his best useful idiot, the President of the United States, as we learn more and more about the Trump-Russian collusion. But that's not all. We got Reggie on line three, who highlights yet another thing that happened, a terrible thing that happened in calendar year 2017. Reggie, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah, happy Thursday to you too, Mark Levine. Merry Christmas to you, by the way.
Thank you.
And, I would just like to know that why did the GOP, the Republicans, and the conservatives, whether it be in talk radio, television, or internet, or otherwise, would just stand by, sit by, and watch as net neutrality begins or happens?
Net neutrality. Yet another terrible thing that happened in 2017. So you want to know why Republicans ended net neutrality in 2017? It wasn't because of the public. It wasn't because of, Democrats strongly opposed it. The vast majority of Republicans strongly opposed it, and certainly the vast majority of independents strongly opposed it. In fact, on the FCC website on net neutrality, and I was one of the commenters, and I hope you were too, there were tens of millions of people opposing the move. There were about 2 million supporting it, but of those, more than 90% of them happened to be Russian trolls, hacking trolls, bots put forward by companies. They weren't real people. Virtually everyone in America opposes. So why did they do it? Well, I think you know the answer, Reggie. They did it because their donors want them to. And Republicans never give a damn about what the majority of the American people think. They don't even give a damn about what the minority thinks. They only care about what their donors think. That's, in fact, why they did this terrific tax scam, right? It's not that so much that they want to harm middle-class people and want to bring us into massive debt and want to destroy the economy, but their donors threatened that they wouldn't give them another dime unless they got their payout. You know, their donors were putting coins in the slot machines that are Republicans. They're putting $100 million there and $100 million there and $100 million there, and they have to get the payoff of billions of dollars, indeed more than $1 trillion. If they don't, they'll stop putting those millions in the Republicans' election campaign. They needed their payoff. And Republicans said, yes, sir, we understand. We know who we work for. We work for you, Koch brothers. We work for you, Sheldon Adelson. We work for you, all that mass dark money. And so that's what they did. They turned it all over, and they handed America over. It kind of reminded me of when someone's been fired, and it's their last day at the office, and they try to loot as much as they can before they get kicked out. Well, that's what the Republicans are doing. They're looting the America, and no one is looting more than the biggest thief of all, the thief in chief, the President of the United States, who is personally profiting, stealing money from American taxpayers because he is a corporate jet owner and he is a golf course owner. So, Reggie, does that explain why they wanted to end net neutrality?
Well, yeah, because like I said to you before, and I'll say it again just to reiterate, first they took over talk radio, then cable and network television, and now they've done it again, yet once again with the Internet.
Yep, and they are. I mean, you've got companies like Sinclair that are taking over local TV, took over the show I used to be on. I used to be on a show that had both sides, but there is no both sides anymore. It's all about a steady diet of lies that they're feeding to an increasingly ignorant American people. Yay, 2017. I'll be discussing more of this when we get back. If you want to call in, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Back after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, talking, recapping the events of 2017. It wasn't the best of years. Like I said, it kind of reminds me of a disaster film where you begin the film and everyone's nervous about the horrible thing that's about to occur. The horrible thing does occur. It's much, much worse than anyone imagined. The good citizens rise up to fight it. And by the end of the movie, they've beaten it back a bit, but they're still a little sad for all that it has done. Maybe we're not at the end of the movie yet. Maybe this is just right before the intermission, actually. 2017 did end on a good note. It did end with an uprising of the people against the wannabe dictator. But I'm afraid in Act 2, the Empire will strike back. One of the most searing events, I think, in people's memory of 2017 was Charlottesville, in my home state of Virginia. Charlottesville, a protest over whether or not to remove a Confederate memorial, a statue of Robert E. Lee, became a rally for neo-Nazis, a rally for white supremacists, a rally where people battled in the streets and a besieged police force often just looked on. I'm glad the police chief of Charlottesville was fired. He should have been. And the lessons of Charlottesville should be a lesson for us all. To me, the great lesson of Charlottesville, well, there are several. One of them, just in terms of policing, in terms of laws, is that it's ridiculous that we have laws in Virginia that allow you to carry firearms at protests. Even Alabama prohibits firearms at protests. The police were often afraid to act because the people were armed. And imagine, just imagine that someone, we know, for example, that a white supremacist shot at a black guy and missed. There's video of that. Imagine if black people had then shot him, and then white people had then shot him, and then good and well-meaning white and black people shot each other, and some vicious people shot as well. And I mean, it could have been hundreds dead. So that's one lesson. Another lesson is, no, Mr. President, there are not good people on both sides. When you're rallying against racism and for racism, there are not good people on both sides. When you're rallying for Nazis and against Nazis, there are not good people on both sides. There are no good Nazis. There are no good white supremacists. There are rural white voters who have needs that need to be addressed, absolutely. But their belief in white supremacy, their hatred of immigrants, their hatred of women or gay people or Jews or anyone else or Muslims, that is simply not acceptable in 2017 America. And we have every right to condemn it. And I know, did you see that Nazi crying? Oh, no, I pretended to be a nasty, you know, I'm a nasty person. I'm going to go out and kill a bunch of people. But no, the police are starting to arrest me. Yeah, we see. I think Charlottesville woke up a lot of white people who didn't realize how much systemic racism we still have in this country. A lot of us knew about it. Certainly black people knew about it. But Charlottesville was a wake-up call to remind us that this hatred is still alive and well and supported by people like the President of the United States and much of the Republican Party. 2017 was a reminder that misogyny still exists, that sexual harassment still exists, that women... I think many men were legitimately surprised when they learned that a majority of women in the United States have been sexually harassed at one time or another. They just didn't know. And thank God the women spoke out and talked about the cases. And yes, some were far more egregious than others, and each case has to be judged on the merits. But when will Donald Trump get questioned? When will the 19 women that have accused him get their day in the court of public opinion? When will that be investigated? It was the year, yes, of our worst fears. Las Vegas, still, I think about Las Vegas, and this was a country music concert. Most of the people who were shot at and murdered, many of them were probably gun owners who couldn't shoot back up into the 35th story of a hotel. And we wouldn't want them shooting at a hotel, would we? It showed the limits of the good guy with a gun. Good guys with a gun were mowed down along with good guys without guns. All because, yes, of the NRA. Because some enterprising mass murderer wannabe created a wonderful little contraption that converts a semi-automatic assault weapon, which is already an extremely dangerous weapon of war, and converted it into the equivalent of a machine gun. Yeah, I'm talking about bump stocks. A word that probably none of us had ever heard of 3 months ago. I'm proud to say that the day after the Las Vegas massacre, I wrote on social media that I would put forward a bill to ban bump stocks, and I went on television to talk about it and to drum up support and to get federal support, and I got all the Virginia federal lawmakers on board, and I'm proud to say that I am going to introduce that bill. I think it's HB 40 to ban bump stocks in the Virginia General Assembly, and I know that many of my fellow delegates and senators agree with me and are joining on the effort. But we have to go far farther than that. Yes, bump stocks, banning them will save dozens of lives, maybe hundreds of lives in America. I don't know, maybe only a dozen lives in Virginia. But when more than 30,000 Americans are murdered every year by guns, by people with guns, by dangerous people who shouldn't have access to guns, we need universal background checks. We absolutely need them. The irony is the people who were killed were the people that Republicans tend to have sympathy for, right? White country music fans, people in a church in Texas. Of course, mass murderers don't distinguish between red states and blue states, between children and adults, between gun owners and non-gun owners. They just kill. And there's going to be a battle all across the nation, and I'm proud to work hard in Virginia, between those people who want to give more access to terrorists, more access to mass murderers, more access to people who've committed domestic violence, more access to those gangs that we used to see on Virginia TV. The problem with MS-13 is not that we allow immigrants and refugees to come to the United States. We've been doing that for a couple hundred years, and I think it's gone pretty well. The problem is that we arm gangs easily. It is legal in Virginia and most states for people to go out and buy a assault rifle, a military-grade weapon. It is legal for them to do it. They just have to do it outside a gun store. So I'm going to have legislation this session to have universal background checks. And I'm quite confident that virtually all of my Democratic colleagues will agree with me. This is an issue that, frankly, most Republicans support. So 2017 was a year when hopefully something will be done. I'll tell you this. It was also a year when people threw up their hands and said, see, we can't do anything. We just have to accept that 30,000 Americans will die a year. We just have to accept that 93 die a day. We just have to accept that 4 people will die during this radio show due to some form of gun violence or suicide or accident. Well, I'm proud to be with folks who will never accept that. We know that in other countries, common sense gun regulation has worked, and it can work here. And 2017 hopefully will be the beginning of the end of that. 2017 was also the year that North Korea got a nuclear weapon. Well, actually, they've had a nuclear weapon ever since the Bush administration, but now they are able to weaponize it. They're able to put it on missiles, missiles that can hit not just Alaska and Hawaii, but the continental United States, Chicago, probably even Washington, D.C., and a president who has no idea what to do about it, a president who does the opposite of what Teddy Roosevelt recommended, a president who speaks loudly and carries a very small stick as people all over the globe rush to abandon America. And why shouldn't they? This president declared America first. This president is one who mocked the NATO alliance. This president is one who follows Putin's every order. Someone who does more for Russia than he does for America. No wonder our allies are scared and nervous. People like German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who works so well with Barack Obama, is terrified. Her nation is terrified of Donald Trump. And you had Britain, our greatest ally, the UK, condemned the President of the United States for fomenting hate in Britain by one of his stupid tweets, one of his false tweets, promoting some nationalist right-wing supremacist, white supremacist group. And that's what the president does, right? He's the king of fake news. Tweet after tweet after tweet, like, I don't know, a 6-year-old, but really a very unwell-behaved six-year-old. I really don't want to attack six-year-olds. Most of them are far better behaved, far more knowledgeable, far kinder than the President of the United States. Donald Trump sullied the image of America all around the world. And even though the vast majority of Americans oppose him, two-thirds. And by the way, for all the folks who talk about the 32% that support Donald Trump, and they do, let's all remember that more than two-thirds of Americans reject Donald Trump, that he lost the election, that he does not represent the United States, he does not represent the majority of the United States, and it is our obligation as Americans to stand up and fight. And if there's one silver lining to 2017, it's that fight we did. This is a wannabe dictator. He would love to be Vladimir Putin. He would love to be like the dictator of the Philippines or the dictator of some tin pot dictatorship where he would control everything. But we rose up. The people rose up. The women, the Women's March rose up. Black Lives Matter rose up. The press fought back. The press having captions underneath their television screens saying the president lied about this. The New York Times, the Washington Post, Democracy Dies in Darkness. More people are reading newspapers again. What America is facing is the greatest test of its democracy since Benjamin Franklin. Well, I'd say since the Civil War. But one of its greatest tests, shall we say, in its history, since Benjamin Franklin said, "I give you a republic if you can keep it." This is a test of whether or not we believe in our freedoms and are willing to fight for them. And to our credit, we are. In Virginia and Alabama and all across the country. So much so that I predict here and now, and I'm not the only one predicting this, that it will culminate in a Democratic takeover of the House of Representatives in 2018 and the Senate. Now, that's a harder one to do. I admit it, a harder one to do. But all we need is 2 out of 3 of Arizona, Nevada, and Tennessee. We can do this if we all work together and are not complacent. We'll take one more break, and then I'm going to look forward to 2018. And what we have to expect next year. If you want to call in, it's 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back, right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levin with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, talking about the events of 2017 and what we may expect for 2018. This is my last 8 minutes or so on air until April. So hopefully I can impart a tiny bit of wisdom. I don't know. I'll do my best. I got 8 minutes left. The one story I haven't mentioned in detail this hour, of course, is the Russia investigation. An investigation that keeps getting weirder and weirder. I mean, from the very beginning, when we had Jim Comey, he's one of the ones fired by Donald Trump, Jim Comey tell everyone that Hillary Clinton happened to get the wrong email address. Although, interestingly, Hillary Clinton's emails were never hacked by the Russians. State Department was hacked. The Democratic National Committee was hacked. Apparently, a private server is pretty good to prevent hacking. Maybe we should have praised her and not condemned her for that email thing. But whatever it was, that's what he brought before the American people. That's what the press mentioned hundreds of thousands of times while spending less ink on the fact that Donald Trump sexually assaulted women and admitted it and bragged about it and bragged about hitting on a married woman, moving on her like a B-word. What they didn't talk about, what Jim Comey knew but wasn't talked about, and that's why I'm sorry, I am no fan of Jim Comey, is the fact that the candidate for President of the United States was working with our most powerful enemy to commit treason against the United States. He was encouraging Russian espionage. In fact, he did it openly. He encouraged them to hack into Hillary Clinton's emails. Remember when he said that? What other American president has encouraged espionage? Even Benedict Arnold, who was never president, had the decency to hide his espionage. But these people did it in the open. And now we learn fact after fact, drip, 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 Trump Jr. talking with Russian agents, and Trump son-in-law, Jared Kushner, working with Guccifer 2.0 and Paul Manafort, taking orders from the Kremlin, and George Papadopoulos and John Ashcroft, ha, old name.
Paul Manafort.
No, I'm thinking the former Alabama senator. Why is my name? I guess I don't want to think about him.
Jeff Sessions,
Attorney General Sessions, lying about what he about all his contacts with Russia and how we are still unsurprised and not mentioning that the President of the United States, after kicking out the American press and allowing the Russian press, gave top secret information that got an agent killed to the Russians. Now, remember when people were complaining about Benghazi, complaining that even though it wasn't under her control, that Hillary Clinton ran a State Department and someone in the State Department didn't give enough security and negligently allowed Americans to die? Donald Trump is actively turning over our intelligence to our enemies. If that's not treason, what is? I guess it got lost in a tweet storm. Can you imagine if any Democrat had done this? Had actually turned over our most secret information to our greatest enemy and got secret agents murdered? Just another day. I do think the Russian investigation is proceeding apace. I do think Robert Mueller is doing an excellent job. I do think this will be the story of 2018, and it began right now. It began in 2017. We've gone through the impeachment alphabet. It's a long word. But I've already gotten to the IMP. I remember each segment. You can go back when I announced the I and IM. We're at the IMP. Soon we'll get to the IMPE. I do think after the Democrats win the House in 2018, it'll be time to impeach this president. I think by then, Mueller's investigation will be complete. I think the evidence of conspiracy and collusion and treason and espionage is overwhelming. And I think Michael Flynn is going to give us a lot of it. I only got 3 minutes left. All right, real quick, 2 minutes, actually. Let's go real quick to a call. We got Jake, line three in Eureka, California. Real quick, Jake.
Hey, Mark, I just want to say this. Donald Trump is guilty, 100% guilty. Trump is a traitor. And if folks, you know, if they don't understand what's going on, just look at how he acts. Innocent people do not act like Donald Trump. Innocent people don't have to obstruct justice. They don't have to engage in witness tampering and intimidation. They don't attack the FBI and the legitimacy of law enforcement in this nation. When he's supposedly, you know, supposed to be the guy protecting our laws, Donald Trump is totally guilty. And why anyone out there can't see this, well, you just must simply have your heads in the sand.
Jake, well said and briefly said. You just said it all in 30 seconds. That was great. That was a better job than I could have done. Thank you for your call. Let me just wrap up by saying that 2017 is hopefully, if not the beginning of the end of the beginning of Donald Trump. This is a true test. This is a test of America. And hopefully, like that little piece of smallpox that they put in to make you, to immunize you to the great disease, hopefully this will be a wake-up call. Hopefully we will build up our immunity, build up our antibodies, and in the fight to protect our press, in the fight to protect our immigrants, in the fight to protect Native Americans and African Americans, in the fight to protect LGBT people and Jews and women and anyone this guy attacks, frankly, to protect the middle class, to protect poor people, to protect innocent Americans who are just trying to live their lives, that we will immunize ourselves and make us stronger. You know, back in the 1950s, we had Joe McCarthy, and he tried to take down this country, and he didn't succeed either. So let me leave my last show in 2017 with a little bit of hope. Hope that people will see the truth. Hope in the two-thirds of America that does look beyond this wannabe dictator. And hope in you, because it's up to you to work hard to protect your country. I'm going to do my best, but But only if we all work together can we save our country and immunize ourselves for the future. Happy New Year, everyone.